You're listening to BVRN, the Black Vault Radio Network. Welcome, everybody, to the next edition of the Black Vault Radio. I am your host, John Greenwald Jr., owner and operator of theblackvault.com. It feels pretty good to be back here on the air. Unfortunately, I was forced to take a long hiatus. There was a lot of changes in my life, but also I was working on a lot of changes to the Black Vault. You'll notice not only a brand new redesign, the site's looking a lot better than it did. A lot of new features have come aboard, one of which I'm very, very excited about. I'll talk about it in just a couple of minutes. So unfortunately, due to technical reasons and obviously due to some time restraints, the Black Vault Radio did have to go on hold, but we're back. We're running strong, and you can see one of the biggest changes right now. We are simulcasting, obviously, our radio show via podcast. So you might be just listening to the Black Vault Radio. But what you may not know is we are now broadcasting on video as well. Not only myself will be on video, but where possible, my guests as well. They could be joining me from around the globe, but all on video right here on the Black Vault Radio Network. So it's a very exciting feature that I am implementing. I am very much interested in your feedback. So please, when you can, drop me an email. Pretty easy, just go to theblackvault.com. There's a contact form on there. Let me know what you think of the new features. One of which, though, that I just mentioned that I am very, very excited about leads me to why I'm bringing my first guest on. For those of you who have paid attention to the Black Vault in the last couple of weeks, I've tested what is called the case file database on the Black Vault. What this is a case file database, where people can not only catalog their own UFO sightings or unidentified military sightings or ghost experience or any other type of paranormal activity, but all investigators and researchers can now add their case files to the Black Vault as well, and it's pretty easy to do. Now, what does that mean? Well, you can upload the text of any of the research you've done, the witness testimony, all of the above. You can actually upload photographs. You can upload videos to the case file. You can upload books if you wanted to. There's ways to upload other files. Put a PDF on there. Put a Microsoft Word document. Upload thousands of pages. It's all up to you. I'm opening that up because I believe very, very strongly our field of not only UFO research, but really the community that's interested in just expanding the human mind. They need something like this. I've been a proud supporter of many organizations out there who have spent a lot of time, money, and resources and manpower to go out and investigate, whether it be a UFO sighting or ghost sighting, and put in the time and the effort to do so. Now, they do amazing work. I don't regret turning the witnesses that have come to me through the Black Vault to another organization. I'm proud I did that. They've done great work. There's been a lot of work that have come out online because I was able to forward that person over. It makes me feel good. But I feel that something is missing. I feel that, unfortunately, a lot of the information is lost. Now, that's not because anybody's doing bad work or the organizations aren't doing their due diligence. That's not true. But I believe that when you talk about if somebody took 20 photographs or they took a 50-minute video, a lot of times what you'll get at the very end is a summarized report. You might see the one or two photographs, the best evidence, the investigator's thought of what it might be, the opinion, maybe 1 or 2 minutes out of that 50-minute video. But really what I think is lacking is that raw research. Because there could be an investigator across the world, across the globe, that may know something that we don't and that they can contribute. So we never know where the value truly comes by looking at this material. So when I built the case file database, as I just mentioned, you can upload photos, videos, you can upload any type of Word document, PDF document. It gives access to the globe your case file. Now, one of the coolest features, and again, whether you're an investigator, researcher, or a witness, what you can do is you go online, go into the case file database, and submit a report. You submit a case file. Now, it can be as little as just the text. I saw an unidentified light. This is what it looked like, the time of day, the date, the location, and so on. Or you can upload that video, upload the photo. But it also asks for an address. Now, obviously, not everybody is going to want to put in their address of where they were, and that's okay. You can just put in the city. You're in Los Angeles, put Los Angeles, California, and you're okay. That's even better. Here's why. It will show a map and actually mark where the sighting or the event took place. Again, I take UFO sightings, ghost sightings, paranormal activity. It doesn't really matter. There's different categories for each. Now, if you put that street address in, it will pinpoint exactly on the map where the case took place. Now, the best part of this is that there's a little man on the top left corner. If you're following on at theblackvault.com, you click on UFO case files, view any of the cases, and you'll see that map, and you'll see that little man on the top left corner of the map. What you do is you click him, and you drag him over to the spot where that sighting took place, and instantly, you're actually transformed to Google Street View. You can actually walk around the area where the event took place. So you could be reading the witness testimony, and they're talking about a storefront that's nearby or the house across the street or what's going on. You can actually be walking around virtually, no matter where you are on the globe, via Google Street View. It's a very cool feature and one that's very unique. As far as I understand, there's really no place like it. So let me give you an example. I'm in my front yard and here in North Hollywood, California. And I put my street address because I just saw a UFO. I come in, I go to the Black Vault, I sit down, I type out my report, I can't explain this thing. I took a photograph of it, so I upload the photograph, I put in my street address, and right then and there, instantly, it'll go onto the Black Vault, and anybody in the world can go on there, they can see that case file, see the photograph, and go, wait a minute, I wonder if there's a street light there, because I took it at night. Well, they can click that little guy over and start walking around and realize there are no streetlights. And in fact, that's true. There's not a single streetlight on my street, which gets pretty dark, so I get to see a lot of cool things in my front yard. Unfortunately, never a UFO. So I won't be uploading any UFO photo from my front yard anytime soon. However, what's cool about it is that you can actually, as a researcher, go in and see little details like that. So it's going to be a very strong tool for a researcher in New York to see the area of a sighting in the middle of Wyoming or in the backyard of someone in France. It's going to be a very interesting feature because I want to see how, if at all, it's going to transform how investigators can really communicate with each other using this tool. There's not a whole lot of sites that allow you to put a 50-minute video online or a 3,000-page report if you really wanted to create a 1,000-page report. I've got the ability to put all of that online at the Black Vault. So check it out, www.theblackvault.com. Click on Case Files at the top. It's a pretty complicated system, but very easy to use in the same respect. So make sure you check it out. Submit those sightings. It's a very young feature of the Black Vault, so obviously it needs to grow a little bit. So there's case files to view, so I welcome the feedback. Just click on the contact form at the top there at the Black Vault. Let me know what you think. I'd love to get your feedback on it. But that leads me to why I'm bringing on my first guest, Trevor Lauder from Lake Havasu City, Arizona. Now, I first met Trevor when I was researching a show that I did for the History Channel. Some of you may have seen UFO Hunters. I was one of the producers and writers on Season 3, and was responsible for a couple of those episodes, whatever on. Now, we were talking about what happens when the military either gets a report of a UFO, what happens. I called it first response. And really, it was just that. What is the first response to the military? So we actually had quite a few cases that came our way, and we were actually able to kind of keep it in one central region, which was the Southwest, mainly in Southern California and Eastern Arizona and Lake Havasu City, which really was the most amazing case of the show. Trevor had a video to show us. He had an amazing story, and really it was one that we were pretty excited about. Well, when I met Trevor, I was really struck by him being very, very level-headed. Sometimes you might meet somebody who has a story to tell, they want to be on TV, and unfortunately it turns out that it's just not going to work. So Trevor really didn't strike me as that type of a person. I did my research behind the scenes, Googled his name, did some more background as a producer. We try and figure out who we should and shouldn't have on the show. And during the research, I didn't find much on Trevor. He had been interviewed a couple times in some local newspapers and told his story, but really didn't gain the national attention that UFO hunters would bring him, nor did he really even care about that national attention. One of the other things that struck me about Trevor was, again, he didn't care about that national attention, but he didn't want that spotlight. He wanted to get the information out to those who cared. He felt the information was important. He wasn't saying it was an alien spacecraft. He was saying he couldn't identify it. He was also showing us a case with a video of an object that was just too big for reality. It was much larger than any craft that we have. It was also being chased by military jets, which is obviously what intrigued me as the producer of this episode. Well, how does the military respond? Well, was it an escort? Was it were they chasing the UFO? It really became an amazing story, one of which that I, as a producer, did not expect until the very end of producing to Trevor how this all came out. We brought in a military expert to analyze Trevor's testimony, but also the video. It coincided with each other, and the conclusion that our military expert came up with was pretty amazing. So we'll get into this case with Trevor Lauder in just a couple of minutes when I bring him on here to the Black Vault Radio. It feels good to be back. Thank you all for listening, and even to those who are watching me on the Black Vault Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Trevor Lauder. So welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. I am your host, John Greenwald Jr. Joining me, and this is a lot of fun for me, I still can't get over this, via video from Lake Havasu City, is Trevor Lauder. Trevor, welcome to the Black Vault Radio.
Oh, thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be a part of this.
It's a pleasure to have you. There's a couple of reasons why I'm excited to actually be doing this show with you. First and foremost, we've been planning it for quite a while. I've had a little bit of a hiatus from Black Vault Radio Network. There's lots of reasons on why. I'm just glad to be back on the air. But number two, I'm excited to have you as my first guest. Here's why. Recently, as you know, on the Black Vault, I launched my UFO case file database. It's actually more than just the UFO stuff, but obviously what we're going to be talking about is a little bit about your experiences. I'm excited about this because over the years, I've had tons of people write to me and say, hey, I've seen this, I've seen that. And I've pointed them to different organizations, but unfortunately, a lot of times they just get lost in the shuffle. And what I don't want is that deserve that. I want to put those videos online, put the photographs online. And that's how you and I met. And very quickly, and I want you to kind of take the reins on this, but very quickly, so the audience knows, how Trevor and I met is I was producing season 3 of UFO Hunters. And I was producing the episode entitled First Response. And I got a phone call, and Trevor, I'll let you say his name if you want to, or call him a pseudonym if you want, but got a phone call from somebody who knew you, learned that we were doing this show, and said that you had some pretty incredible experiences over in Lake Havasu City. And so I won't lie, I Googled you, I couldn't find you, and I liked that. I didn't want somebody that has been around the media and told their story 10,000 times. I wanted something new. And little did I know that you were having these experiences pretty much of recent dates. And that then therein led to our connection, got you onto UFO Hunters. For all you UFO Hunters fans out there, you will recognize Trevor. And Trevor, let me let you take it from there. Give me a little bit of background on who a UFO investigator are you. I mean, give us some background and then tell us what's going on over there in Lake Havasu City.
I appreciate the opportunity to kind of give you some background. And interestingly enough, I am not what I consider myself to be a. However, over the last right around 16, 17 years, I can say that I've consistently been a magnet, or just had my eyes to the sky at the right time, at the right moment. Just consistently over the years, just have a collection of events that I've never been able to explain through conventional means. And we live between Las Vegas, L.A., and Phoenix, so we're kind of in this triangle of consistent air traffic right where I live here in Lake Havasu. And yeah, just like I said, over the last 16 years or so, I've had the fortuitousness to have been without getting into every single thing I've seen so far. I mean, I've got dozens of sightings of my own, but to kind of go back to where you were leading in with, we'll call him JJ. JJ is my friend out here, and he and I met originally through the local newspaper. And this is actually a pretty interesting story. I work in an office building. We have these great big huge windows looking south into the desert sky, and we get started really early in the morning. You know, sunrise, and I walked into basically all of my office workers up against the window, the ones that had gotten there before me. I came in a couple minutes late. But,
at least you're not being recorded at this moment.
Oh, no, yeah. I don't think my boss will either. So everybody's up against the glass, and one of my coworkers was, you know, just like, you got to check this out. Look at this thing. And they're looking at this through make out a spherical object that was kind of radiant amber glowing at a distance. And it did stand out as not a cloud and not a commercial aircraft, and it was staying still in the sky. And it was we're facing the direction which Parker is about 40 miles away, and I would say that this object was between 30 and 35 miles away, and it was very sizable. So I immediately went outside. A couple of us went outside to get a better view, sans the glass we were looking through. And you could obviously tell it looked like the Kuiper Dome sort of hovering up in air. And then the dawn sunlight was coming up, and the amber glow from the sun, in my opinion, was reflecting off of the surface of this object. So we got this, you know, it's not like I've gone to school for this or anything, but I lined it up with the palm tree that was up in the landscaping there at the office building, and I lined it up with a palm tree and noticed that this thing was moving in a sort of a classic 50s hovering hubcap, you know, used as a as a spaceship. I mean, it really was just sort of hovering this way, and it was moving around. However, it was not, you know, traveling yet. It didn't have a specific trajectory at this point. So
did you spot a plane at this point? I mean, you're a smart guy. You've seen aircraft all the time. This was not it.
No, absolutely not a conventional craft. And then the movement, to me, once I lined it up and I noticed that it's behaving oddly for the size that it was, I ruled out, you know, blimp, weather balloon. You know, it was behaving as if it were on a small scale, yet it was obviously gigantic. You could tell the distance from here to there atmospherically was disrupting the color. It was summertime, and, you know, the summer in the desert definitely cuts down your visibility when you talk distances. So,
and if you can estimate a size?
I would say I'm going to go with the Superdome. I mean, it was
that big.
It had to have been a football field in length.
Wow.
At least in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely had sort of a flat, bottom part and a more dome top. So, you know, once I kind of realized, you know, yeah, this is definitely out of the ordinary. We a little bit, people started going back in, and I was intrigued, and I stood there, and I just continued to watch it. I continued to kind of keep it lined up. Not long after everybody kind of gave up and went back in, an aircraft, a large aircraft, I would consider it to be the size of an airliner, a jet airliner, typical commercial airliner, was an immediate trajectory to this object at the same distance. This thing, this aircraft was flying directly to it, and I was totally just amazed by that. What
military or commercial?
That's a really good question. I can't answer.
Gotcha.
I mean,
there's
not enough identifiable information for me from that distance. There's no way I could tell, but I could see the contrail, and I could make out the general shape ahead of the contrail to verify. You know, the standard traveling right towards this thing, and it got what I would assume to be between maybe a mile and 2 miles, maybe about a mile away from this object. The object shot away. It shot out of sight.
Gone.
Gone. Absolutely not up, not down, left or right in my view, but away. So it would have shot dead south, due south, not gaining any altitude that I could tell, but it was instantaneously gone.
You're still with you at this point?
Unfortunately, I was the only one that saw that.
No, I gotcha.
I stayed and I watched, and immediately when I saw that other airliner come into view, I was intrigued, and I was like, oh, I just want to see what this is going to be all about. And so it shot off out of view, and the airliner or the military jet, whatever it was, kind of continued along its course. And I was pretty excited about that, so I went inside and I told one of my coworkers who was most excited about it. Everybody else had pretty much settled down, and I really wasn't, going to go in there yelling and screaming with my hair on fire. I just, as you can see, it wouldn't have done any good anyway. So I walked in, and I walked up to him and I said, "Man, you're not going to believe this. That thing just shot off like a rocket as soon as the airliner was coming through." He was excited. He was like, "Really?" And so we went back outside, and we're kind of looking around. And if you know anything, I mentioned, we are between L.A., Vegas, and Phoenix. Our air traffic, besides our local air traffic, the small planes, we don't have a major airport here, is very consistent. I mean, where we see, I'll see a dozen commercial airliners flying from L.A. to Phoenix. I can go right outside right now anytime. I grew up here. I've been here 27 years. I can tell you exactly where they fly, what lines that you could see a flight between L.A. and Phoenix. I mean, anytime. It's very clear. It's never mix and match. Maybe when there's adverse weather, they'll kind of go a mile this way or a mile that way, but I mean, it's very consistent. We got back outside and we noticed four other additional aircraft. I would have to say military aircraft because they were between 10 and 15,000 feet, which is a big deal here.
They're
only ever 35,000 feet. They have absolutely no reason to be that low. These aircraft that were following a trajectory of west to east, not too far-fetched, but, they were about 4 or 5 miles apart. And then we had another set. This was the interesting part. Anybody from this location can tell you maybe one time they've ever seen a jet airliner, a jet aircraft, or even a military craft flying north to south. That's a big flies north to south in this area. Except
now, why not? Why wouldn't they? Why is that a big deal?
Well, because due south is Tijuana. I mean,
The other country and all.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there's nothing due south.
Okay.
If you look at Lake Havasu City on a map, and then you look at the main Air Force bases, main airports. There's nothing going on north to south over this town.
Okay.
And so we never see it. We never see that kind of activity. We look up, and we see these two other aircraft simultaneously and trailing right behind, timing-wise, crisscrossing the sky.
Wow.
Heading due south, right to what I can say is the location of this object. This is all occurring within 20 minutes.
Hmm.
Something directed these craft to behave in the air in a way we've never seen. I've never seen it since. I've never seen aircraft behave this way.
Now, help me. Well, very quickly, when was this? Sure. What year?
This would have been 2007.
2007. So are you saying that these objects were engaging this UFO, whatever this UFO might have been? Were they engaging? Were they fighting?
Well,
were they playing with it?
The first one engaged with it.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that the object moved and accelerated out of sight as a direct result of this craft approaching.
Okay.
There's no other way to describe what happened. Here you have a craft maintaining a consistent altitude, not moving forward or backward mm-hmm. in any way that I could tell, that immediately reacts when this airliner or military craft approached, and then it shot out of view. So that was direct contact. That was an event as a direct result. That this craft must have seen this thing. There's no way in my mm-hmm. mind that they could have missed that. Now, then the other four craft that followed, and then my coworker can confirm with me as well, it would be another three that we ended up seeing mm-hmm. minutes later. They were just crisscrossing through the sky. And it was an unbelievable sight, the contrails that were left behind of this activity just crisscrossed. It looked like a checkerboard.
Wow.
So they were looking, searching.
Engaging?
Yeah.
I mean, I say, you know what? I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth. Forgive me.
Right.
I didn't mean that. But
right.
What it sounds like is you've got this object. You've got another one coming in, right? And it gets X amount of distance away, and then, boom, this thing's gone. You know, it just shoots out of sight. Then, you know, you said, what, about 20 minutes later, you see these multiple aircraft, which you assume are military, and crisscrossing in the sky, either looking for or... I mean, to me, that's amazing. Whatever that UFO might have been. Now, let me ask you this. Did anything happen after that?
Not immediately after that, no.
Sighting or event was...
That was it. Now, earlier that morning, some of the women that were driving to work, they have to go through a certain section of town.
Mm-hmm.
This particular group said that they saw something orange and glowing immediately over our... there's a really big golf course basically in the center of our town, and at that time it was dark, early in the morning hours, and three women that were driving along this road all came in and said, "Did you see that thing hovering over the golf course?" It was some kind of an orange object. However, what they described was smaller. It was disc-shaped. I didn't get any other details.
But this was at the same time that you saw...
This was the same day.
Wow.
It was the same day. And I would say that the events were about an hour apart. This small sort of sighting, this small group of women that sighted this object
mm-hmm.
over the golf course described it as smaller than an airplane. But still relevant to them, that it was odd and that it didn't make a lot of sense to them.
This is what was fascinating to me doing UFO Hunters and meeting you for the first time. And I feel very lucky and blessed that I did, because I've learned so much from you and what you've seen, but you're very level-headed about this whole thing. I mean, you don't just say, "Hey, this is alien spacecraft. This is it." And forgive me again. I didn't mean to put words in your mouth about, these objects or military craft engaging the UFO. But that's what I respect about you, is you're seeing these objects, and you just, in my opinion, from what I'm hearing from you, is that you don't know what they are. But what's also fascinating about that area is that you're not the only one. Take your word for it. And I did a quick Google search actually while you were talking, and you see that UFOs are not entirely uncommon in that area. Am I accurate in saying that? Is that true?
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, you're right on the money. I mean, we're our location is really just pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we and our community is amazing. We are constantly, as a whole, we're after the city for light pollution. Mm-hmm. I mean, every neighborhood in this town, outskirts, you know, take away Main Street. We do have some lighting down on Main Street, but we've got a lot of folks here, including myself, that we fight really hard to make sure that the light pollution is down to a bare minimum. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I had some neighbors move in not too long ago, and they're down from Idaho, and they have a bunch of property lighted up. They moved into this house here, and they lit it up like a prison yard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was like a football field. You mm-hmm. know, the game was out. It was playing. I went out there one night, and I was like, I went over and talked to my neighbor, and I said,
"That's got to stop."
He's the nicest guy in the world, and I kind of walked him outside a little bit, and I just showed him all the houses as far as the eye could see.
Uh-huh.
Dim Malibu lights,
yeah.
Nice dim amber, you know, glowing lights. And we like our desert sky.
Mm-hmm.
So. Just to kind of give you a little background, I mean, we're in this bowl. We've got mountains all the way around us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just a little interstate highway in and out of here. No major freeway. No major truck stops or big old blazing lights. I mean, we are in an awesome location for sky watching. And so, to answer your question, yeah, absolutely. There are sightings often in this area, and. You know, like I mentioned before, we're triangulated between all of these different Air Force bases. You know, Luke and Nellis and the third one I come into my mind. But
Edwards, in California,
Edwards.
Yeah.
Thank mm-hmm. you. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to think of as Edwards. So, yeah, I mean, we, interestingly enough, if you go on to Google Earth, just to kind of give you a little idea of how often we see military craft around here,
mm-hmm.
I mean, all the time. So if you go to Google Earth and you feel like you want to spend a few minutes there, you can look at the area between Lake Havasu City and just comb through the desert at about 5,000 feet mm-hmm. till you get to Bill Williams River. And somewhere in there, you're going to find a KC-135 refueler caught in still frame.
No kidding. On the Google Earth, you can see that.
Yeah. Wow. And you know what's behind it?
What's that?
An AWACS.
Oh, no kidding.
A KC-135 AWACS is right behind
you. That's you know, I haven't seen that a whole lot. I know I love those websites that show the cool things about what's been caught on Google Earth, though. That's
yeah.
got to be a little bit of a rarity. I don't think that happens too often. So you guys have quite a bit of activity.
Yeah, that's. I think that's a good analogy just to show mm-hmm. you know how often we are. To Apache aircraft that come through in droves,
uh-huh.
they like flying right across the lake wall.
Wow!
And they'll get down, you know, 500, 1,000 feet, and they'll just cruise the river.
Wow! Well, it sounds like there's a lot, you know, just a lot going on over there in Lake Havasu City. And Trevor, I was worried about this. The hour is flying by. We're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to have to take a little bit of a break, but stay tuned for more with Trevor Lauder joining me via video all the way from Lake Havasu City, Arizona. Thanks, Trevor, for joining us. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. I am your host, John Greenwald, Jr., joined by Trevor Lauder all the way from Lake Havasu City, joining me via video right here on BVRN, the Black Vault Radio Network. I hope you all enjoy the new features here to BVRN. I know I'm very excited to have all these very fun things going on the blackvault.com, including BVRN's new feature of doing this all via video. Trevor, thanks so much for being my first guest. We've been talking a little bit about all those amazing experiences that you're having in Lake Havasu City. It sounds like it is not a quiet town to live in. And one thing that I want to point out, I'm just pretty much echoing the point you just made, you live pretty much around quite a few different military installations, and you get a lot of military activity in your area. Now, the reason why I want to stress this is, very quick note, I grew up in Northridge, California. It's right next to Van Nuys. For anybody who is a Southern California native, you'll know Van Nuys Airport is one of the busiest little commercial airports there is in the States. That's what it is known for. And I lived literally about about a mile away, grew up about a mile away. So my whole life I saw airliners, smaller commercial airliners. I saw a lot of air traffic. And when you grow up with that, you get to learn to discern between a Cessna or a prop jet or a big airliner or whatever, and you fail to remember that there's a lot of places on this planet that you don't see that. Now, the same is true for the military aircraft. Trevor, you said, how long were you there? How long have you lived in Lake Kansas City?
I automatically default to 27. I'm going into my 28th year this year.
28 years. So my whole point is, you're pretty much well-versed in discerning a military aircraft, because you've seen them for 27-plus years, from whatever these objects are that you're seeing. And I think, you know, that is an important point that everybody should remember, because, again, when you hear about these jets chasing another object, you think, oh, well, that's military. But I think you, more so than me and more so than a lot of people that don't live next to those militaries, can discern between the two. So he does realize that point. Now, Trevor, I want to get into something a little bit more broad-natured here, if we have some time to get more into the exact sightings that you're seeing, if you get some videos and get some photos, exactly what have you captured. But in the beginning of the show, you said that you were a magnet. Okay, and that stuck out to me, because obviously you're talking about this sighting before the last break. It's a fascinating event with multiple military aircraft, in your opinion, it sounds like, and obviously this was something big to you. But in the same respect, you talk about it like, that's not your first one. That wasn't your first day at the rodeo. So is that true? I mean, you obviously have seen this stuff a lot, so why you?
It's a good question. It's
and it's a deep
it's
one, I'm
pretty
sure.
Pretty extensive, yes. I don't think a half hour would really.
Is it luck? Being a magnet, we'll keep it shorter.
Not
I mean,
to
is it
toot my
is
own
it
horn?
Is
it's observation. It's observational. Timing, luck, absolutely. The best story that I can possibly share in terms of luck is a very short one.
Mm-hmm.
But just to give you and your audience members just an idea of what I experience from day to day.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Jeep. I like to go four by and out in the desert. And I was out with one of my best friends. We'll call him Whiskey. We were out driving around. It was dark. You know, it had already passed dusk, and we were looking for a specific spot out up Standard Wash. And it's a well out there that's pretty famous, and I hadn't been to it in a long time. We were trying to find it. And we got out that direction, and we decided, okay, we're just going to stop, make camp, cook up some burgers, and kind of kick back, because we had been out just driving all day. And so we do. We stop. Again, it's dark. Step out of the Jeep, open up the back. I look up, and I see the space station and the space shuttle move through the sky and glint, which they do for about 8 seconds. Between 8 and 10 seconds, you can view the space station and the space shuttle only at certain times. Right when I stop and we get out, I tell him, hey, by the station, right from start to stop, you know, from start to finish, we saw the entire event. That if you think about that statistically, what are the odds that I got? And it's that's not the only time. It's just
by the way, that is an amazing sight to see. My dad and I went out target shooting one time, but it was planned. We weren't as lucky as you were.
Yeah.
We knew that it would be in the sky, but it sounds like you didn't know.
Yeah, 2 years
be in the
before
sky,
that,
so.
I knew it was coming, so I set my telescope up for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a 10-inch Dobsonian, you know, a great big telescope. I had the incorrect lens in it for the sighting of the space station, and I didn't realize that. I had a 25mm in, and I should have had a 10mm in. There's no way that I could have been able to line up perfectly where in the sky. I mean, they give you a general, you know, idea when you look at the website and say, okay, kind of look towards the, you know, for us, it was look to the west and kind of the northwest, and then you'll see it.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, it was going to be visible for 12 to 16 seconds. And I had my telescope lined up randomly, hoping I could see it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was lined up perfectly. I was looking through the view piece. I saw the light begin, and I, without touching it to get it off center, I looked right through it, and it just traveled right through the eyepiece. And again,
wow!
Oh, it was amazing.
How did that look? That must have been.
It was absolutely amazing. It was just so beautiful. The clarity, the color, everything was in gold, and I could see the space shuttle moving along. They weren't connected at the time. They were just moving alongside each other. That would have been 2009, I think. It was 2009.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I, you know, I'm not exactly sure what that is. I don't know what that means. I don't pretend to think that I'm called on or...
in fairness, that sounds like a little bit of luck. But I want to go back to something that you said, and who knows, maybe there's something else going on, maybe you feel that, or maybe that's the reality, I'm not real sure. But you did say something that I want to ask you, as somebody who has seen a UFO, whatever, again, that might be, whatever that means, but you've seen multiple sightings, you've had multiple sightings, you've seen multiple UFOs, and I have not. So I'm asking you this wholeheartedly. You had said something that it was based a little bit on luck, but also that you were observing, that you made an observation, is kind of how you put it. And to me, that brings up something that I talked about on the radio a long time ago with Dr. Roger Lear, a good friend of mine, and he and I hosted a radio show together, which was a lot of fun for me. But I remember a conversation that we had, and he brought up this point that people just don't take the time to look up. And it's not necessarily that anybody does have that calling or does have that good luck or does have that something inside of them that draws UFOs in, but it's somebody that takes the time to observe. Now, it sounds like without lights there in Lake Havasu City, you've got a beautiful sky to look at, so who wouldn't skywatch when it comes to that, or at least just gaze upon the stars? But again, you take the time to look up. Do you think that that is the problem with the majority of the people, like myself, that have not seen anything?
In my mind, it would have to be. I mean, you know, logic dictates that statistics would skyrocket for sightings. I mean, the number of sightings, think about it, if every American stopped and said, you know what, I'm going to take the next week and I'm going to watch the sky with an open mind. I'm going to watch it. That's the key.
Mm-hmm.
The show that we did with UFO hunters and that particular sighting that I was able to catch and record, and I put it up on YouTube, that's funny to me because one of the comments on there immediately was from a local who said, yeah, that's the refueling planes that we see all the time. You know, that was what he or she had fallen back on as being the answer to that. And of course, I'm not going to ring any bells and red flags over something that I've been seeing since a little boy. Since I was a little boy, are these refueling planes that everybody knows about in this area. I grew up watching those things.
Yeah.
I know how loud they are. It's a KC-135 with a C-130 behind it. It's loud, and those lights are positioned the same way that they've been positioned for the 28 years that I've been watching them do that. So,
So you're saying that you got not ridiculed?
No,
I don't know. Maybe no, ridiculed is
little,
the right word,
a little skepticism.
Skepticism, I guess.
Really good, but it pushes me to. To make a note of this, that there's something else up there, and if everybody took the time to look up with an open mind instead of just, oh, those are the refuelers. Well, wait a second, are you sure? Are you sure those are the refuelers? Because it's dead silent. In this particular case, dead silence. Fighter jets, Holland, rear from Southern California, probably from Edwards. I don't know exactly where they were coming in from. But at the time of this, this craft flying over town, over our town, just the activity of the fighter jets trying to catch up to it, the way this gigantic thing moved, I mean, this was four times the size of what those refuelers have ever looked like or ever appeared to be, and it was stone silent.
Now, just for clarification, this is the case that we talked about on UFO Hunters. So for those fans out there of UFO Hunters, this is the case that we had not only recreated a little bit graphically, but also brought in a military expert to analyze Trevor's testimonial of what he saw. Now, Trevor, you're giving the brief overview, but feel free to kind of take it to the next level. I mean, are you saying that these particular craft, did it seem like they were engaging this object? What was your opinion on the connection between this object that you said, what, was four football fields? Yeah, is that what you just said?
My original description of it is, 400 yards wide, to the best of my ability. Being able to discern its altitude was difficult because I couldn't believe my eyes. So even viewing it through binoculars, I was able to view it through 12 power binoculars. There are no words. I was looking at what I can only describe as a series of framework with individual amber orbs in sort of a... Mm-hmm. Originally, it looked to me like it was as if someone had built a huge iron outline of a football. So it kind of had like an oblong shape to it, the innards of this, mm-hmm. so the hull, so to speak. With random orbs of amber light all throughout, not in any uniform, no uniformity to those. Very, there were a lot of clusters there, and then I could just barely catch the glow of those amber lights on a black surface or a dark surface, and then it sort of just spread out. It to me was a boomerang shape or a definitely a winged shape. One of the wings, and you can see in the recording, one of the wings has a light on the end of it, a consistent amber light. However, because it flew directly over us, there were seven other witnesses to this too, it flew directly over us at one point and blocked out all of the starlight. It was massive. It was absolutely...
So this was a solid craft, obviously. You weren't seeing multiple crafts or multiple lights that would appear as a craft,
right,
which might happen. Now help us out. You've seen a lot of military craft in your time. 400 yards across. How rare is that? Or impossible.
Right. That seems impossible by our standards. Unless it was extremely loud, and that's what I would expect from a physics standpoint, that whatever it is that we would see that would be that large would be extremely loud because it would require so much energy to move it. To keep it airborne, and it was going anywhere from 500 to 700 miles an hour. It was traveling very, very quickly at one point.
Mm-hmm.
So originally, as it glided over us the first time, seeing the starlight black behind it, I would say it was actually moving quite slowly. What I would compare to maybe 200 or 300 miles an hour, where a small craft. But later on, once I saw it again when I was able to record it, it was traveling much more quickly. So it had varied in speed. One of the interesting parts about it, too, was it had made a turn. So it had made it was traveling southeast at one point, and without banking, just turned and started heading due north from its location. So it just... did this. It just, without banking like a typical plane, it just made a level turn. And
so it was not, it was just simply
no,
not
nothing about it was conventional.
It was
at all.
Just,
it didn't have any standard, blinking lights to indicate right and left. no turn
signals.
No turn signals. That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, that
exactly.
rules that out.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that I have to point out to not only you but also to the audience is that for those who did not see this particular episode of UFO Hunters or is not aware of it, number one, you can download it on YouTube, so I highly recommend anybody to do so. But what is amazing to a television producer, and I'm removing myself from being connected to the Black Vault, talking strictly as a television producer, you need a couple things for a great story. Number one, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and somebody who doesn't sound absolutely insane. And that was Trevor in this particular case. Thank goodness he could formulate three words in a complete sentence, which was great, and speak clearly. So that was perfect. But on top of that, you needed the interesting case. He had that. Number three, you needed some type of photographic evidence, okay? So he brought to us a video. Now, of course, a video can always be better. It doesn't matter if it's mounted on a tripod or if it's Steven Spielberg's camera shooting a movie, he will always tell you that video shot could have been a little bit better. Well, the same is true for UFO videos, but Trevor had something. He had something to show us. But on top of all of that, what we took away was not only Trevor's testimonial, not only his video evidence, but we took a military expert to analyze not only the video, but also Trevor's testimonial on exactly the formation of the craft and so on, and his opinion, and with his military background, and he is smarter than, you know, quite a few people I have interviewed in my day about military history, tactics, and military strategy, was that these craft were in an attack formation. This is what he said on the air, that is exactly how Trevor described them. That's exactly how the video echoed his testimonial. And on top of all that, a military expert confirmed all of it. So whatever this aircraft was, it was definitely being in, and that really was, and again, speaking as the producer of that show, writing some of these UFO episodes are not easy. It really, it's not. But that one came together so perfectly because we all just kind of looked at each other after the military expert heard you and saw the video and said, okay, this is my opinion. We all couldn't believe it. So we thank you, you know, as collectively, as a whole, for coming out, because it's not, in my opinion, it wouldn't be easy to talk about this because you're talking about stuff that really doesn't exist. A 400-yard wide craft coming over Lake Havasu City being engaged by military aircraft, I'm sure that doesn't sit lightly, you know? I mean, that's not something that you would just blurt out at dinner, but correct me if I'm wrong. That whole long-winded point leads to my next question. Is this hard to talk about for you, or is it just, hey, this is what I see,
that's
here you go?
That's a really good question. You know, I do feel unique in this way. Originally, I'll stick with my term, being a magnet for events, and not getting carried away with all of it and just sort of observing it and trying to kind of reason and figure, okay, what is it I'm looking at? I'm able to see it. I'm able to formulate the words to describe it. So I've chosen in the past with this sighting. I did post it on MUFON's website originally at the direction of JJ, my friend JJ. He kind of said, hey, you know, you should put this up and see if anybody else saw it, which I thought was a good idea. And then the one that was in our News Herald newspaper, which is the sighting we originally started with, that dome-shaped object. That I also went on. I think that one I went on to the National UFO Reporting Agency for that one. And as I started reflecting back at what I had have seen before that, several cases, I started thinking about all of it. And as you know, before we decided to do this, I actually came to the conclusion I was going to stop talking about it. I was going to be and not be real vocal about it, except to my friends and family. I'm not shy at all to, you know, to talk about it. I was the UFO guy at work for a while, and I've got
a little alien.
It's really funny because at work I've got just a standard Dell computer, you know, but I've always wanted an Alienware computer. Anyways,
yeah.
So the IT guy cut out an alien head and taped it onto my desk.
Nice.
And so on. Anyways, that went on for a little while. To stop that.
I've always wanted an Alienware computer myself.
Yeah.
And if they ever want to sponsor this show, it's the Black Vault Radio Network.
Yeah.
But no, I think that is courageous. And I appreciate you, you know, coming out and really giving your story and not stopping. And I don't want to cut you off. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, but there's a couple things I do want to deal with before we go. And one of my last questions to you for the audience is this, and this ties into the new feature on the Black Vault, which is getting a ton of traffic. In fact, I may think that it's going to overtake the amount of traffic that goes to the government document database of this case file database. So anybody who's listening, I invite them all, if you've seen something strange, by all means document it. Because as Trevor is a prime example, these things happen, and these things are not abnormal, and you don't have to be afraid to speak about them. And it helps other people realize, hey, if they saw something, maybe even down the street from you, that they can talk about it openly too and not be afraid. So let me ask you, Trevor, what would you say if I was just Joe Schmo listening to this radio program and I've seen multiple UFOs, but I do not want to tell anybody about it, and I won't, and I'm not thinking about it, should I, and why?
Well, I think that anybody who is going to experience something like that or has experienced something like this, even if you have to come forward anonymously, and I appreciate as a producer, that's anonymity is not the key, because anonymity means you can just go hog wild with whatever detail you want. No one will hold you accountable to the information you're providing. That's the paradox. However, we can it's seen by now, decade after decade, that we're not going to get full disclosure anytime soon. It doesn't look like it.
Yep.
Curious about the larger truth going on in the world around you, then it is your responsibility to share data so that others can collect the data, like yourself, anyone else out there, UFO investigators, that are just trying to fill some of those gaps. I mean, there are people, you know, my opinion, I won't necessarily share about that at this time, but there are people who are traumatized by events that have happened to them, that have occurred to them, whether it be abductees or folks who have claimed to have, you know, implants put in them by extraterrestrial beings. It's a real phenomenon. And right now you hear that the most. Okay, this is something that's really happening. So if you have additional information, put it out there and let people analyze it. Give them access to that. Be truthful. The hoaxers, really? Hoaxers?
Yeah.
Really? I mean, you need a girlfriend, you need a new hobby, you need to do something else. We're actually trying to, you know, guys like you and some other folks in the field are actually trying to collect real data to put the pieces together and get the answers that we deserve. You know, John, do you deserve to know the truth about the level of technology that we have, or are we experiencing an actual connection to another race that lives light years away? Do you have the right to do that, to have that knowledge? I think so. Do I have that right?
Yeah, I agree. I
believe the average citizen have that right? Yeah. It's arguable, of course. You know, we want to know these things. And so for folks to add to the collective data is a good thing.
I agree, and you know what, that's one of the things that I want to do with this case file database. I talked about it a little bit on the very top of the show, and it's something that I feel is and will be of great value to the field. Not because I built it, and hey, look at me, and I'm not trying to toot the horn. What I'm trying to say is, obviously, the Black Vault isn't going anywhere. I'm now, oh gosh, I started this in 1996, so what is that, about 15, 16 years now that I've been doing this. It's been a long time, about 15, so that's about half of my life that I've devoted to this, so it's not going anywhere. But on top of that, what I think that the real value is, Trevor, you don't need to put your address in, but it has the capability that if you put your city or even right down to a street address, like I said in the beginning of the show, you just drag that little man over and walk around on the streets where you actually were, see it via Google Earth, goes in satellite view, and then you can go into street view. It's a pretty cool feature, something I think is very powerful. So I invite everybody, listen to Trevor. If you've seen something, share it, because you have no idea what type of effect that will really have on others, either down the street from you, next door to you, or across.
If you'll allow me to interrupt.
Please.
On top of that, we were asking earlier on, you know, what would it be like if everybody looked up in the sky for a 1 week straight? You know, let's, you know, call it the second week in February is sky watching day. Every citizen walks outside and everybody spends at least an hour looking to the sky with an open mind and prepared to report back what they see. sightings would go through the roof. So what does that mean? It means more collective data so that we can come to some kind of a conclusion. For the skeptics, we can come, I'm not saying I'm a skeptic, but for the skeptics, they can come to some kind of a conclusion so that we can spend our time and energy on other things then. But if there's a bigger answer, a more interesting answer, the more people that are spending a few minutes looking at the sky and able to report back that information, it's going to get us to leap forward, which is where we need to be. We need to advance the understanding of the phenomena. As the phenomena is growing, sightings are growing, and the interest is growing, and it's all very exciting. But we need Mr. and Mrs. Anonymous to come forward and say, hey, you know what?
Yeah.
I remember that night, March 17th, over Lake Havasu, when that great big thing, you know, flew overhead, and this is what it made me feel like, and this is what I saw.
Well,
we saw with the Phoenix Lights. The phenomenon of the Phoenix Lights is undeniable. There's hundreds of witnesses from hundreds of different angles who all came forward and said, yeah, and they were able to really put something together on that, that undeniable. It's undeniable that there was a craft of unexplainable origin in physics over the city of Phoenix. I mean, there's no denying it. So, and it was because of everybody coming forward. So we just want to perpetuate that.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. And I think that I won't let you forgetting about that point, that we should organize a day, you know, where we take a month or 2 months to really solidify that date and ask all of the Black Vault Radio listeners and all of the people that are out there that we can reach via press releases and all that to go out, take photographs, because this system will allow you in 5 minutes what you saw. You didn't see anything? Okay, you know what? Report that. If that was part of this collective day, great. But if somebody down the street from you saw something and you saw something, believable would that be? What if five people in the same state saw something? What if, you know, and the possibilities go on. Now, I think we should organize that. Hopefully you were serious, because I think that is an amazing idea. You've come up with quite a few unbelievable ideas since I've known you. And one of the ideas that I think that I'm most excited about is something that's going to be coming online to the Black Vault Radio Network in just a couple of weeks. It is a brand new show that is going to be starring not only myself, but Trevor, you have decided to join me on as well. I can't thank you enough for doing that. One thing that I have realized since you and I have known each other since UFO Hunters, which is now what? Was that 2 years ago already? About?
More than 3 years now.
Wow. Is it? Oh, God. I don't know. Yeah. Time flies. But we have amazing conversations that we can get right down to it. So you and I have decided, and to all of you who are listening to the Black Vault Radio Network, be prepared, because in the coming weeks, Reality Checked with John and Trevor is coming to the airwaves. Now, we're not only going to be talking about UFOs. Obviously, we're here on the Black Vault Radio. I've invited Trevor on to talk a little bit about his experiences in Lake Havasu City, talk a little bit about his experience with UFO hunters and coming out with his stories. But Trevor, we're going to take it a little bit deeper than that. We're going to take it to not only the paranormal and the fringe, but we're going to be talking a little bit about everyday stories. We're going to be talking about government and military history. We're going to be talking about the Black Vault documents. We're going to be talking about quite a bit. What made you want to do this?
Well, I think there was a time when, I think I mentioned earlier, where I was sort of throttling back my my inquisitive side. I guess that's the best way to put it. However, in conversation with my work, my work, I deal with a lot of different people, a lot of different personality types, and I'm fortunate enough to where I interact with people all day long, and every once in a while I do throw something out there that it asks. I ask the question for myself: do I want to be small and close down and take my inquisitiveness and my questions about life, reality, and the universe die a dim little light that never bothered. And then as I got to know you, and as we kind of opened up, and we have had some amazing conversations that I haven't shared with on a broad scale by any stretch.
Mm-hmm.
I came to the conclusion that I want to talk about what it is we're all experiencing, and I mm-hmm. think that it's such a broad range. There's people on all ends of the spectrum, and I think it would be interesting to bridge all of these black and white and gray shades together in conversation and say, okay, you know, there are folks that fold their arms and say, Jesus is my savior, I don't want to talk about anything else, the end. That's mm-hmm. that's their prerogative, and I understand some of what they hold on to, because I myself, I'm a believer, but not a true believer in the sense where, you know, I'm ready to draw my sword and kill someone in the name of religion or anything like that. Mm-hmm. However, and then on the opposite end of the spectrum, you have staunch science-minded people that, you know, we were all amoebas at one point. We came from a primordial soup, and you know, we are just a flickering candle. We're alive one day, and we're toast the next, and nothing after, and it's all just a mathematical explosion of matter, and we happen to be walking around, and it just there's mm-hmm. everything in between. And I like to walk with an open mind, and now that we have both found a medium that we can kind of open some of these doors up and discuss with this medium, it's fantastic.
Yeah. So, and it's something I'm really excited about. And with these new features to the Black Vault and to the Black Vault Radio Network, right here on BVRN, where on some of our shows you're going to be able to see us, and, you know, with you showing us exactly how that UFO turned, not a whole lot of radio shows do that. I'm excited. I geek out about stuff like that.
Do it again. I got it.
Why? Because we can see you do it. That's why. So I'm very excited about that. For all of you, make sure you stay tuned to BVRN, the Black Vault Radio Network, for Reality Checked with John and Trevor. Trevor, one of the testaments to how good this show is going to be is we blew right past the one-hour time limit that we set for ourselves, and here we are quite a bit longer than that.
So worried I was going to run out of material, John.
Yeah. No,
not a chance.
I knew when I said, Trevor, welcome to the show, that we were going to run out of time. So with that being said, though, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to our show. I'm looking forward to bringing you back on the Black Vault Radio. We'll get deeper into your story. Again, not only on Reality Checked, but also right back again on the Black Vault Radio. Hopefully you will join me again on this program as well. But thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. It's been my pleasure. And good night, everybody.
And thank you all for listening to the Black Vault Radio. I am John Greenwald Jr. signing off, inviting you to join us next time on the Black Vault Radio.
Debbie also is the book author.